Welcome to the Stats Modeling the World Instructors Podcasts. 10 points in under 10 minutes. We hope you find them helpful.
Hi, Dave Bach here to talk about Chapter 23. In Chapter 23, we begin our look at inference for means, introducing the t-models to deal with the extra variation caused by not knowing the population's standard deviation. Here are 10 points to consider. 1. The bottom line is that in this chapter, nothing is new about inference itself. We still create and interpret confidence intervals in the same old way. We still use the same reasoning and the four-step procedure for testing a hypothesis. The only new issue is the need to scrap the trusty normal model in favor of a t-model, an adjustment students will readily make. 2. We won't do inference for means pretending to know the population standard deviation. We have emphasized throughout this course that statistics is about the real world, and we won't change that now. In the real world, no one ever knows the population standard deviation. Gossett discovered the t-distributions to resolve this dilemma. 3. And we won't mention the outdated pre-technology approach of using a normal model for so-called large samples. That dates from an era when books printed only one page of the t-table, and the old advice was to then turn to the z-table because the normal model would be pretty close. In this age of graphing calculators and statistics software, there's no reason to shy away from t for any number of degrees of freedom. So we can do better than just approximate it with z. We can do inference for means the right way, using t. Z is for proportions. T is for means. Always. 4. Start right in with an example involving data, like the coffee machine in the resource guide. Students will be able to set up the outline of the hypothesis test. After all, these tests are all the same. This time the hypotheses are about mu. Never y bar, of course. We know y bar. That value comes to us from the sample. It's the mean of the population we wonder about. 5. The mechanics seem pretty straightforward at first. We find y bar and then try to find z. Trouble. The central limit theorem tells us the sampling model for y bar has a standard deviation of sigma divided by the square root of sample size. Strike one, we don't know sigma. Students will probably suggest using S, the sample standard deviation, as an estimate. Great idea. This shows they've caught on to the kind of statistical thinking we want them to develop in this course. But there's a problem. The sample standard deviation S varies from sample to sample. This introduces more variability in the denominator, something that wasn't there when we worked with proportions. How do we deal with this extra uncertainty? Some students may suggest cutting ourselves a little more slack to make up for this increased variability, and that's exactly what a t-model does. 6. Note that the mathematics underlying the use of t requires the assumption that the sample comes from a population that is normal. Strike 2. We don't know the population's center. Our hypothesis is about that. We don't know its spread. That's why we need t. And we don't, indeed can't, know its shape either. All we can do is take a look at the distribution of the data in the sample to see if it's plausible that these data were chosen at random from a normal population. We hope to see a roughly mound-shaped symmetric distribution without skewness or outliers. That's the nearly normal condition, telling us it's okay to use a one-sample t-test for means. 7. Yes, this nearly normal condition is a little vague. First, be sure students understand that the issue is not whether the sample is normal. Samples aren't. They can't be. We must have a sample drawn from a population that's normal. But we can never be sure about the population. As the sample size increases, the normality of the population becomes less critical. We say that t-models with larger degrees of freedom are increasingly robust with respect to the assumption of normality. We're particularly concerned about outliers and skewness, and especially in small samples. For n's near 20, some skewness is okay. For n's near 30, we can use t unless the sample is strongly skewed or there are far outliers. For larger samples, we often don't even look at the histogram, justifying use of a t-model simply by saying the sample is large. 8. It's a great idea to follow the hypothesis test with a confidence interval to estimate the true mean. Spend some time with the interpretation. Students may still think that confidence intervals are about probability or about statistics from other samples. And now there are many new ways students can be wrong about what the interval means. Most common are thinking that 95% of the population or of the sample must lie in the interval. Not so, of course. The interval is about the parameter mu, not about individuals in the population or in the sample. 9. Remember that for confidence intervals or hypothesis tests, your conclusions are about means, not about individuals. 10. Talk about what to do with outliers. We recommend performing the analysis twice, with and without the outliers. The concern, of course, is that the outlier will distort the results. If your conclusions don't change, if, for example, you reject the hypothesis when including the outlier and also reject it after removing the outlier, then it's clear the decision is not based on the impact of the outlier.
Thank you very much. This concludes our discussion. We hope you find it helpful.